Welcome to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, where world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan answers your questions and offers healthy options for raising your pets in a more holistic manner. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure what to use for flea, tick, and heartworm prevention? Join Dr. Judy now as she interviews the top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, and I'm your host, Dr. Judy. Today I have a special guest who has developed a company that is doing great things for our pets. And I'm always in awe when I find people who have brains that kind of blow me out of the water. And especially when I meet microbiologists, because I'm going to admit, microbiology was probably my worst class in undergrad and my worst class in veterinary school. Just not a fan of microbiology. I think partly because when I went through school, I didn't really realize how important it was going to be and how much of a role it would play in the health of my patients. And, you know, one of the big buzzwords that we hear so much about right now is the microbiome, which we'll have Holly describe that a little bit better for us as we get into the show. So my guest today, Dr. Holly Ganz, is CEO and founder of Animal Biome. She's a microbial ecologist who has published more than 20 papers. She left academia to become an entrepreneur when she founded Animal Biome in the fall of 2016. Animal Biome provides assessments of the bacterial composition of the digestive tract of dogs and cats and supplements to restore balance to the gut microbiome. So basically she's playing with poop a lot, I think, but we'll find out. Her efforts to translate academic research into solutions for animal lovers began in 2015 when she launched Kitty Biome, a citizen science project that she started while working at UC Davis. From the Kitty Biome project, she found that imbalances in the gut microbiome are common in pets, and certainly anyone who's been listening to my show for any amount of time understands that, and you know, we all realize that it's that those gut problems that are leading to so many other problems that we're having with our pets. And there is a pressing need for better approaches to maintain gut health and potentially prevent the development of many chronic health problems. And boy, I am all for that. Holly received her PhD from UC Davis, where she studied coevolution between microbes and animals, which basically means we all need to get along together and we have to have the good guys in enough numbers. After receiving her doctorate, she was awarded an international postdoctoral fellowship from the National Science Foundation to study in Switzerland, how cool is that, how genetics affects the spread of fungal infections in animal populations. Kind of weird for me because I would think of Switzerland as being too cold to have a lot of fungal problems running around. Subsequently, she was a postdoctoral fellow at UC Berkeley on an NIH-funded research project, where she studied how bacterial pathogens survive in soil to infect African wildlife. Man, this is cool stuff. In collaboration with researchers at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. She also holds an MS from UC San Diego, where she studied population genetics, and a BS from George Washington University, where she was elected to Phi Beta Kappa, received special honors in the biological sciences, and graduated magna cum laude. An animal lover, Holly is dedicated to improving animal health and wellness through the application of the latest innovations in microbiology. Holly, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And I want to know, how many years have you spent in college?
Oh, I know. I spent way too long in college. And, you know, I thought about going back to vet school after my postdoc, and my husband begged me not to.
Oh, my Lord. Well, yeah, okay, so you'll be 72 by the time you get into practice at this rate. Man, oh, man. So you know, I have taken, a lot of courses in, you know, trying to decide what makes you tick. And a lot of times, people who have, like, a million degrees and they're the most brilliant people who just, you know, keep learning more and studying and researching, somewhere along the way, and I've heard this multiple times, and I just want to see if it was ever true for you, somewhere along the way, somebody told them they were dumb, or they weren't smart enough, or they didn't know enough, and so those people spend their entire life proving how smart they are. Does that ever happen to you?
I think I really loved learning and was good in the classroom. And
well, there you go.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, good. So she did not have her psyche scarred. She just likes to do this. So I'm glad to hear that. So tell us, just for, you know, the sake of, we've got somebody who is brilliant on this call. Tell us what the microbiome is, exactly what it does, and why we should care. And you have all the time in the world.
No problem. Yes, the microbiome is a community of bacteria and fungi and other microorganisms that live in and on us, and as well as our pets. And I mean, everything has a microbiome. Even your cell phone has a microbiome. But for living organisms, they can play really critical roles. For us and our pets, the microbes in our gut help us digest food. They actually produce some neurotransmitters. They interact with the nervous system. And of course, they play critical roles in the immune system, you know, because the gut provides a barrier for pathogens and chemicals to come into the body.
Right. Our skin forms that same role, or the animal skin forms that same role. And, you know, one of those things that we learned in genetics, how the body actually forms, and I think what a lot of people don't really get, because it took me a while to, you know, really grasp it, is that our skin is the barrier to the outside world, and our gut is actually on the outside of our body because it has an opening at each end that is exposed to the outside. So we're kind of, our body is just like a big tube.
Yeah, exactly. We're kind of like a donut.
Exactly. We have a hole in the middle.
Yes.
And so the gut does play a very important part in keeping pathogens out of the body.
Yeah, especially because, you know, we can eat food that has pathogens, you know, and historically we did.
Well, and historically we still do.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, there have been times when I've eaten some suspect things out of my refrigerator and gone, oh, is this going to come back to bite me? I'm not sure. You know, and I, most times not. So, what made you decide to leave academia, start your own company, and, like, what was the turning point where you said, wow, this is something that needs to be not sitting in a laboratory in a university, this needs to be in the hands of the general population?
Well, to be honest, I got started with kidney biomes for sort of two reasons. One was that I found it really hard to get academic funding for research on animal health, especially for dogs and cats. The NIH, you know, their mission is for human health, right? So veterinarians, and I was working a lot with the vet school. I did actually work as a researcher there for several years as well. And then I moved to the Genome Center. I just found that the foundations that supported that kind of research didn't have large grants, and it was very competitive to get them. And so I turned to crowdfunding as a way of sort of launching a project to try and understand what is healthy for cats in the gut microbiome. And we chose cats because they rule the internet, and or at least they did. Now there's some thought that dogs are taking over. But we thought it would be fun to engage people around their pets. And also because citizen science is something that's really taken off in the last decade as a way of engaging people in science and getting them excited about it, because the public's not going to fund science if they don't understand why it's relevant to them.
Sure, absolutely. So how did the Kitty Biome project work? I mean, so you did crowdfunding. People were basically just giving funds for you to be able to do the research, or, you know, were you collecting kitty poo from around the world?
Yeah, so basically I was collecting kitty poo from around the world, and it was an academic research project. We didn't promise that we would offer anything useful from, like, sort of a diagnostic perspective. Just we wanted to understand what is normal, and people paid $99 for us to sequence their cat poop. We got poop from all over the world, like as far as Australia, we had Singapore, lots of people in Europe, mostly, of course, North America. But what I didn't anticipate was that about 20% of the people who supported this project had a cat with a chronic digestive condition. Mm. And And they were really unhappy with the sort of current solutions that they had been offered because they had, these are all sort of refractory cases where the antibiotics, the steroids, and the prescription diets had failed them.
Right. Well, and there, there's a large percentage of animals out there that fit in that category right now.
Yeah, and I actually found starting to talk to people about their pets to be just so rewarding, and I sort of got hooked and wanting to try and help create new solutions to help them.
So when you say you were sequencing the poo, what exactly is it that you're doing?
Yeah, so we send people a sample kit with a little vial that has a fixative in it, so they can put a little bit of poop. We sort of recommend like a sunflower seed amount, or you know, as much as a pea size amount. They put in a little tiny vial that they.
Nice of you to send them a little tiny vial, because you know when I ask for a stool sample, sometimes I get 3 pounds. Don't need that much.
Exactly. No, people. Actually, one of my friends was like, "You're going to get bags of cat poop in the mail," but actually, literally.
Yeah.
Nobody did that. Everybody followed the directions. So I'm very proud of our study participants. And then we receive that sample. We pull the material out of the fixative, and then we extract DNA from that. And so there we're getting all the DNA. Most of it, though, is the microbes in the microbiome, and not so much as the cat or dog DNA, because we ask them to take the material from the inside of the poop, because we're trying to avoid like litter contamination and things like that.
Sure, sure.
Then we actually do a reaction that we call it's called PCR, the polymerase chain reaction, to amplify a region of the bacterial genome that's called 16S ribosomal RNA, and basically it's just a marker gene that has been used to describe the diversity of bacteria. And then we actually use a platform called Illumina, which is a next-generation sequencing platform, to sequence that little bit of DNA that we have made many copies of using PCR.
So does this actually tell you which bacteria are living in that sample?
Yes. Yeah, so what it allows us to do is to identify to the genus level which bacteria are in the sample when we're just doing a subset of the 16S gene. We are also launching another test where we can actually get to species level, so it just depends on how much of the bacterial genome you sequence allows you to identify it to sort of different levels.
And then, all right, so you got all these different samples from different people, and I'm assuming no two samples sequence the same. They all have different bacteria, yes?
That's right.
And did you find, were you able to take that, because, you know, now comes in the math part and the statistics and all that stuff, were you able to take that and look at it and say, okay, well, these cats who, you know, had, that were on steroids or on, you know, metronidazole or were on, you know, treatment for IBD versus cats that seemed to have no digestive issues, were you able to then group that and look at it and say, well, you know, cats that are suffering with bowel disease tend to fall over in this column, and cats with a healthy bowel tend to fall in this column? I mean, what were you able to do with that information?
Exactly. So we, you know, while we initially were just trying to say, like, what is normal for cats? Of course, that turns out to be a very complicated question. it was very clear that the cats that had these chronic GI problems tended to have low diversity of bacteria. And what that means is that they had not that many different kinds of bacteria, and they often had one or a few groups of bacteria that were taking over most of the sample. So
and
they
did
had
those tend to be more pathogenic bacteria, like bad bacteria that were taking over, or is it didn't really matter, it was just that one or two species took over?
So it does depend. So sometimes there's a lot of E. coli, I would say, okay. But that's not the majority of the time, but that's certainly something that fell out as being sort of an obvious signal that we could see, and something that we can address that I think is actionable from a veterinary perspective. But often it's organisms that are normally found in the healthy microbiome, but when the system gets depleted, particularly from things like antibiotic exposure, then some groups that are normally there can become, just go crazy and become overrepresented. A great example for people, and we are finding this with a certain number of pets as well, is Clostridium difficile.
Right.
which people can end up acquiring in the hospital. But something like 50% of people have C. diff normally, and if they have a normal microbiome, they're fine. But when they get on major antibiotics because of other things going on with them, they can end up with this life-threatening infection. I think
I lost a family member
the same way. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, well, you know, she had a dental infection, took Augmentin, and died from C. diff very quickly, within a few days. So it is scary, and that's, as a matter of fact, I got an email from somebody that's a little bit off topic, but I got an email from someone this morning, and their dog had crystals in the urine. No bacteria, no signs of infection, just had crystals in the urine. So the veterinarian has gone through two rounds of antibiotics with this animal. And I said, why? What are you treating? You're treating crystals with antibiotics? Why aren't we doing a culture? Why aren't we actually proving that there's an infection before we're throwing, and basically they're using Clavamox, which is Augmentin. Why are we using that? And I think that it is a huge problem in both the human and the animal world. Overuse of antibiotics, using them when you don't have proof of an infection, using them when you don't know which bacteria you are trying to kill off and which ones you're trying to save. And so I think that is huge, and I would like listeners to really pay attention to how often antibiotics are used and are they really necessary, because it will destroy the normal diversity of the bacteria in the gut. The antibiotics are not all that selective. They kill a lot of extra bacteria.
Yeah, they harm the good with the bad.
So
hopefully
how many species of bacteria are you doing genus? So how many would you expect in a healthy gut? I mean, so you said sometimes you'll have overgrowth of one or two, but in a healthy kitty poo sample that you would sequence, how many different genus were you looking at for the bacteria in general?
We definitely look for a range. Typically, it's more than 20 genera, which is actually a lot.
Wow.
At the at the species level, it would be hundreds.
Okay.
There can be many different ones within each genus.
So when people are saying, well, I'm taking a probiotic myself, or I'm giving a probiotic to my pet, should they be looking for probiotics that have multiple kinds of bacteria in there? Because I see a lot of these and they're like, oh, well, I forget which one is Acidophilus, I guess, is normally the one that's in yogurt. And people will say, oh, I'm giving him Acidophilus. But in my mind, that's not supplying a broad spectrum that I would think that we would need.
Yes, I think that probiotics can be a good tool, but I tend to view them also as being a bit of a Band-Aid in some cases. They are potentially harming the microbiome, the indigenous microbiome, by taking up resources. I think in the case of probably the lactobacillus, they're more dairy associated. We don't tend to find them occurring in healthy animals that aren't on probiotics or aren't fed a cheese or milk product.
Really? Well, that's quite interesting.
They're really important for young animals that are, when they're nursing and transitioning, when they're weaning.
So the microbiome is also going to change through different life stages?
Absolutely.
And do you find that there are more problems with the microbiome in a certain age group, young, middle age versus seniors?
I think you get sort of discrete problems. There are some animals and they may have come from breeding facilities where they may have overbred them, or it may simply be bad luck. If the mom doesn't have a good microbiome, then she's not going to pass on the right things to her litter. So we do find puppies that end up with diarrhea. Moms with certain microbiomes might be more likely to have a whole litter that experiences diarrhea, and they may have more trouble with weaning and starting to form normal solid stools. And that's discrete from the sort of IBD, which can develop we actually have a whole range of ages for dogs and cats with IBD. But for some of them, it happens more in midlife, but there's plenty of young animals as well. So, we don't entirely know. I think there's a genetic predisposition that some breeds have for IBD. And then, of course, we know that if they're getting exposed to a lot of antibiotics, that they can just be caused by that.
Absolutely.
And then late in life, things can decline as well. We know that the microbiome ages. There's a lot of interest in that because it's potentially something that we could help support and maybe reduce some of the signs of aging.
Oh, that's interesting. So if I have the right microbiome, I can live forever?
Yeah, no, I don't want to promise that. But, you know, maybe we can, you know.
Listen, I've got an 18-year-old dog here that, you know, we'd like him to live another 10 years. So
I was hoping for that, too, with my 16-and-a-half-year-old. Didn't work out.
Yeah.
18's great.
Yeah, we have a 17-year-old, too, and then, you know, we have a lot of teenagers. I feel like we're running the senior citizens hotel at this house. So you've got the 18-year-old dog is in a four-wheeled walker. We have to carry him everywhere. Out of our six dogs, we live with my parents, and they have a 15-and-a-half-year-old standard schnauzer, too, but out of our six, I think four have to be carried up and down the stairs. So I'm really looking forward to having a rancher house someday with all these Either that or I fix my dog's guts so they're perfect so that, you know, maybe they'll be rejuvenated enough to go up and downstairs, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to help the joints too much. Yeah.
We could hope.
I have a carriage for my old dog if I could send you.
We have two strollers, and our dogs are small, luckily, so we can smash three in one stroller and one in the other stroller, and then we still have two that can walk. So, but we do make quite the sight walking down the street with this crowd, let me tell you. All right, it is time for us to take a break to hear from our sponsors. When we come back, I'm going to have Holly get a little more into how this applies to everyday life. Now that we've heard about the kitty biome, we're going to talk about how this is now crossing other species, our dogs, and I don't even know if she's working on anybody other than cats and dogs, but we'll find out, and we'll find out how this is something that plays into everyday life. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Interested in learning more? Visit Dr. Morgan's website at www.drjudymorgan.com, where you'll find detailed information about her blogs, a schedule of her upcoming speaking engagements, free information about integrative and holistic medicine, as well as an interactive forum where anyone can ask Dr. Morgan a question completely for free. Visit her website today to join the mailing list, where you'll find exclusive information and promotions only available to those select subscribers. Dr. Morgan is an accomplished author, having published several books about veterinary medicine and home cooking for your pets. You can find From Needles to Natural, detailing her journey from practicing traditional medicine to understanding the healing power of holistic practices today on Amazon Prime, as well as What's for Dinner, Dexter, and Canine Kitchen Capers, which are two great recipe books that you'll find both delicious and entertaining. When it comes to our pets' health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, Pure New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit LifePureRecovery.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune in to world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan, and now radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show, where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's dental drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com. Dr. Morgan's wellness formula for dogs and cats provides multiple health benefits in one product. Made with all natural ingredients sourced from New Zealand, this supplement can be used routinely to maintain overall physical and mental well-being. This product is particularly beneficial for the maintenance of joint health, nerve and brain function, skin and coat health, immune function, gut health, and liver health. Find Dr. Morgan's wellness supplement today on Amazon Prime or at her website, drjudymorgan.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on DreamVision7Radio.com. So my guest today, Holly Gans, is the CEO and founder of Animal Biome. And when I met Holly and we talked about this originally, I was pretty enthralled with this whole idea because of the fact that we, you know, we talk so much about immunity and allergies and an immune system that's reacting inappropriately. So now that I opened that can of worms, Holly, I'm going to torture you. With all these animals with chronic allergies, you know, whatever has caused them, you know, whether it's a dysbiosis in the gut, over vaccination, we're not going to open that can of worms, you know, whatever it is that sets things into a tailspin. Have you found in your research that if we fix the gut microbiome that these allergies go away? Are they curable? Is it still something that we manage? Do we improve them but not make them go away? What's your experience with that?
We have found with a number of particularly dogs, but I think dogs and cats, that when they restore balance to the gut microbiome by introducing missing microbes using our approach, which is an oral fecal transplant, they, and then it was combined with, I think, having them on a healthy diet, that many of them who have had reported food allergies, although we tend to refer to them as food sensitivities, right, actually are able to start to eat some of these foods again. So it may be that they, by not having the right microbes, they haven't been able to properly process them.
And what about what about environmental allergies? You know, we've got all these dogs who are allergic to weeds and pollens and grasses and trees. Does that have an effect on that?
Yeah, we've had some reports, but it's still early for us to really talk about that. We've definitely seen some big effects with atopic dermatitis in certain breeds of dogs. But I think we have fewer samples for the sort of seasonal environmental allergies.
Oh, well, I'll have to send you a bunch from my office.
Yeah.
So, all right. So tell us how the process works. So somebody says, boy, my pet's got allergies, got food intolerances, chronic diarrhea, IBD. Like, I'm just sick of cleaning up sloppy poop. And let me tell you, I get more poop pictures in my inbox, although you may get more poop pictures in your inbox than I get. But we might be even there. We might have to compare notes. But so if somebody is contacting your company, or if, you know, they're going to their veterinarian and saying, hey, we need to check out this animal biome thing, what's the process? Walk us through it.
Yeah, so we sort of work both with people and also with their veterinarians. It depends on what they prefer. Because we grew out of citizen science, we started with the direct-to-consumer approach. They contact us. We can send them a sample kit where they collect a bit of poop. They mail it to us. Then we send them the results. We're aiming to get that to them within a week. And then they have a PDF report that they can share with their veterinarian. We also have a web app where they can look at their results. But we found that this report is really useful because it's something that they can email. And we also provide some interpretation assistance to them as well, because not everybody took microbiology or really cares about, you know, different kinds of bacteria.
So I get this report, and now it tells me my pet has an overrepresentation of these one or two bacteria, even though he might have 10 different ones. Most of it is sitting over in column A or column B, whatever. So where do we go from there? That's great information. What do I do with it? Feed him the paper.
Exactly. Yeah, it became very obvious very quickly that we needed to have things that people could do to fix things, right? They just don't, they don't care about just knowing why things are wrong, going wrong. So we have recommendations, and we definitely, it's ideal if this is done in consultation with a veterinarian, but we offer some recommendations for dietary and supplementary interventions that can be made to help correct for these kinds of overabundances. So, for example, Fusobacterium is a group which is really common in dogs and cats, not so common in people. If you have too much of it in a your dog, it's been linked to being more likely to have inflammatory bowel disease. But if it lacks it, that's a problem as well. We found that if you increase protein content in their diet, it will help to increase it. And you can actually decrease it by adding small amounts of dietary fiber. So we should go through each group and we make some recommendations for ways to tweak things.
So you're not recommending a specific diet as much as saying we need to increase fiber content or protein content.
Yeah, that's basically the level that we're at. We're not going to try and make a food. We want to sort of see if you can make adjustments to the diet that you're already using.
And so what would you add as a fiber source if you had an animal that needed more fiber?
We started with some other things, but right now our favorites are inulin or acacia fiber. But there are a lot of fibers on the market. Those are two that we've been getting good results with.
And are those commercial products that somebody would just, you know, type that in and find that available?
Yeah, you can buy both of them, organic, on Amazon and other places.
Really? Okay. That's interesting. And then, if you're saying, okay, this pet would benefit from having more protein to, you know, make these other bacteria flourish, do you have any insight for each individual pet as far as what that protein would be, or is it just pick one?
For us, it's just pick one. You know, a lot of people are using sort of food sensitivity testing to try and also elimination diets to identify which, if there are any sensitivities to certain proteins. But yeah, so we can't tell which protein would be better from the microbiome.
Okay. All right, so that's good to know. Yeah, and I mean, we do an awful lot of the blood testing. I have a lot of clients who use the salivary swab testing to look for, you know, IgG, IgM in the system to different proteins and food sources. And frankly, I take them with a grain of salt. Sometimes I'll get an animal that's positive to something just because that happens to be what their diet is made up of at the time. So, of course, they're going to have some antibodies to it. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's a full-blown allergy or sensitivity to that food. And I've also found it over the years, because we do so much with elimination diets in my practice, which for me, that elimination diet is not going to the grocery store and buying a different bag of food. That elimination diet is saying, okay, we are going to pick one thing and put that one thing in the bowl until we get this animal healed. And very commonly, I'm using rabbit just because that is a really low allergen meat in my hands. Mm-hmm. Then we just kind of add things one at a time and see what works and what doesn't. It's a really long process to go through that sort of elimination, but it will give you the best results in the long run. But what I've found over the years is a lot of these animals who were not able to handle, say, for instance, a chicken, dry dog food. We eliminate, put them on an elimination diet, get their gut healed, make them feel better, and a year later, we are able to start feeding them fresh chicken, and they're no longer reactive to it. Now, do you think that is just because we're making their microbiome healthy, and now we've got a better spectrum?
I think it's complicated because the immune system is involved there. So when they get in a chronically inflamed state, then the immune cells are active. And so I think it's both the immune system as well as the microbiome.
Interesting.
It makes a lot of sense, though, that you're seeing that. That's consistent with sort of what we're finding. And I think that your approach is really the the best.
Yeah, you know, I will do the testing just because it's a little bit of a roadmap. It kind of, you know, it's like, well, you know, oh, look at that one. That came up. You know, if our positive is anything over 100 and that one's sitting at 1,000, probably going to avoid it. If it's sitting at 101, yeah.
Exactly. I did the testing on myself years ago, and yeah, basically the food I ate the most was the ones that came up the most. But I wasn't having any digestive issues, so I didn't really worry about it. I just used it to eliminate food I didn't like for my diet.
That was pretty interesting. Yeah, my doctors thought I had an allergic reaction to seafood a few years ago, and so I went in and I had all the little, you know, skin testing done to see what it was that I had reacted to, and I was negative for everything. Like, he's like, "Oh, you eat whatever you want. You're not allergic to anything." I was like, "Well, that's good to know." It ended up being something totally unrelated. It was not an allergic problem, but you know, interesting to do. And I don't even know how accurate the skin testing is when we're talking food. I think for environmental allergens, it's pretty good. But for food, I don't really know. I'm not an immunologist. That was probably right behind microbiology for the I don't like this class either. So, all right. So we get this test back from you that tells us our animal has an overgrowth in one direction or another. Then what do we do?
Right. So we do recommend, like, in general, sort of having a lower carbohydrate, higher protein diet. And then we have specific recommendations that sort of relate to that around the specific groups of bacteria. If they have a lot of E. coli, then we have some recommendations for that specifically, because you can't just do a fecal transplant to fix that.
Oh, interesting.
For C. diff and C. perf, actually, it does seem to respond really well to this FMT approach. And I think my theory behind that is that Clostridium is a group that should have probably dozens of healthy strains that can be sort of lost, and that's what allows when Clostridium goes crazy, it's because its beneficial cousins have been lost from the system, and reintroducing them reestablishes a sort of balance to the community, and that's why FMT is like more than 90% effective for a C. diff infection.
And FMT is?
A fecal microbiota transplantation.
So we're basically feeding poop.
Yeah. So because people were not satisfied with my telling them that their cat had chronic vomiting or chronic diarrhea because they had an imbalance in the gut, I developed a way of reintroducing these missing microbes with an oral fecal transplant capsule that we commonly call poop pills.
So we get poop pills, and we shove them down our cats, and we cure the problem.
Yeah, more than 80% of the time it works. Of course, there's times when there's some cats that are super sensitive, and you know, dogs and cats that have been in a sort of chronically inflamed state, you know, can be more reactive to anything. So we've sort of come to realize how essential it is to work on the diet and sort of try and settle things down first.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of one of those, you know, people want supplements for things all the time, but they don't want to change the base problem, which a lot of times is the diet itself. And that's why I spend so much time talking about and working with my clients and their pets with, first of all, we have to fix the food. The food is the foundation of everything, and if we don't get that right, you know, you keep putting junk in, you're going to keep getting junk out. So we've got to fix that. But then I think, you know, with the testing that you're offering and the fecal transplant, we could see some amazing results. So it's time to take another break to hear from our sponsors. When we come back, I want to talk more about the fecal transplants or poo pills, where they come from, how we know, you know, what's in there, what we need to give, are there different poo pills, all those kinds of things. So stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to get answers to all of those questions and more.
Interested in learning more? Visit Dr. Morgan's website at www.drjudymorgan.com, where you'll find detailed information about her blogs, a schedule of her upcoming speaking engagements, free information about integrative and holistic medicine, as well as an interactive forum where anyone can ask Dr. Morgan a question completely for free. Visit her website today to join the mailing list, where you'll find exclusive information and promotions only available to those select subscribers. Dr. Morgan is an accomplished author, having published several books about veterinary medicine and home cooking for your pets. You can find From Needles to Natural, detailing her journey from practicing traditional medicine to understanding the healing power of holistic practices today on Amazon Prime, as well as What's for Dinner, Dexter, and Canine Kitchen Capers, which are two great recipe books that you'll find both delicious and entertaining. When it comes to our pets' health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, Pure New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit LifePureRecovery.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune in to world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan, and now radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show, where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com. Dr. Morgan's wellness formula for dogs and cats provides multiple health benefits in one product. Made with all natural ingredients sourced from New Zealand, this supplement can be used routinely to maintain overall physical and mental well-being. This product is particularly beneficial for the maintenance of joint health, nerve and brain function, skin and coat health, immune function, gut health, and liver health. Find Dr. Morgan's wellness supplement today on Amazon Prime or at her website, drjudymorgan.com.
Welcome back to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on DreamVision7Radio.com. So Holly and I have been discussing poo pills and poo testing and kitty poo and dog poo, and this all started with the Kitty Biome Project. So getting kitty poo from around the world, which is pretty cool. You know, you wonder, do you have to label those packages so you know the postman knows you're handling kitty poo?
You know, we do have to have a special customs form for those international deliveries, but I think because of veterinary medicine, there's a special exemption for kitty and doggy poo for diagnostic purposes.
That's pretty funny. Because I know we try to send, you know, just kind of some regular stuff to Australia, and man, they burn it every time. They're like, oh, no, that's not coming in our country. So, I don't know, maybe the U.S. is better.
We can't ship poo to Australia. Absolutely not.
Yeah, see, they won't even let you ship poo pills. They're pretty strict over there. So explain to us the poo pills. Where do they come from? What are they made up of? Are there different kinds of poo pills? Do we have dog pills and cat pills? Do we have five different flavors of cat pills and dog pills? What are they?
Great question. So we have basically created a donor bank of healthy stool from dogs and cats. And so, yeah, it's species specific. So cats for cats and dogs for dogs. It really does matter. And we're really trying to replace the current probiotics, which are based on bacteria that came from human infants and from soil for the most part.
Really?
We're replacing them with species specific anaerobic bacteria for the most part. these are harder to grow, and that's why they aren't sort of haven't been exploited yet by the probiotic industry, but they are foundational for health and so really important. And so we're really devoted to creating strains of them that we'll make available in the future. But for now, because nobody's been able to cultivate them, we are using donated material. We screen all of our, every single sample that comes in that's used to make a poo pill is tested for pathogens. We have an extensive panel, so that we are testing for every pathogen that we can think of that would possibly be found and transmitted in fecal material. We also screen the donors every month for parasites, and we screen them for the making sure that they have a healthy, balanced community of gut bacteria. And in general, we make sure they don't have behavioral issues, that they're not obese. They have to be, you know, healthy animals in their prime of life. So if they can't be too old either, just because there are studies showing that the microbiome ages as well.
So these aren't, you know, 10 dogs that live at your house and 10 cats that live in your office. Like, where do these animals come from?
Great question. Actually, we're actively recruiting. So anybody in the Bay Area of California, contact me, HollywoodAnimalBiome.com. We're looking for more donors. We reject many donors, so I've made some enemies in my neighborhood for sure. People who think people don't realize that their dogs don't have good poo. It can be a bit difficult, but to let them know that. So we basically recruit people. I mean, I have one of my dogs is a donor. The other one aged out, and the other one was had health problems. We don't have any, I think, community owned or animal biome owned cats at this point. It's really hard actually for us to find healthy cat donors. That's something we struggle for. The dog material is a bit easier. Each dog seems to produce a healthy volume. And we have both through raw fed and premium home cooked fed dogs and cats.
So that was going to be my next, that was my next question. Does it make a difference whether these pets are on what I consider a species appropriate diet? I mean, would you collect stool from a donor that was kibble fed? Do you find appropriate microbiome from them?
We find that and we're actually working on a paper that we hopefully will be submitting in the next month or so on the effects of raw diet on the microbiome. We're finding that that community is very, very different than the kibble fed dog. And so we can tell right away when someone submits a sample and we analyze it, we know if they're raw fed or not. I mean, it could be if they're on a high protein cooked diet that will be similar, but we can identify the kibble fed from the raw fed very distinctly. And so with the result that, so if somebody requests that they want raw fed, most of our donors are raw fed, but there are people who don't want raw fed. So we do have both.
Interesting.
And they are different communities. So it could be better if they're going to stay on kibble to support a healthy microbiome from a kibble fed dog.
Interesting. So if you had a raw fed dog that you wanted to make the microbiome or improve the microbiome, then it would be best to get that fecal transplant from a healthy raw fed dog.
Yes.
Interesting. So now is that fecal material that you're collecting from these donors, is it processed or handled in any way? I'm assuming it's being dried or something before it's put in those capsules. How is it processed, and what effect does that have on it?
Right. So we are freeze drying it. So we mix in a natural sort of cryoprotectant to protect the bacteria from the freezing process, and then actually goes to minus 50 degrees for I think something like 6 to 8 hours, which is going to kill some organisms, and then we actually keep it in the freezer for 30 days.
Wow.
This allows us to kill off some potential parasites and pathogens, and which we're testing for anyway, but we like to have the sort of backup of that. And it also allows us to quarantine it so that we know that the donor didn't come down with something within that 30-day period.
Interesting. So I know from raw food – because the FDA is being such, you know, a pain in the butt right now with the raw pet food companies, that you can, I mean, and, you know, there's frozen, you know, fermented products where the bacteria survive that freezing process. So in your freezing process, some of the bacteria die and some don't?
Yeah, we think that what we're doing is probably selecting more for the spore-forming bacteria. So they, some bacteria can make go into a dormant stage in a spore form, but then they can come back out of, like, soil has lots of spore-forming bacteria. So when the soil gets dry, that they go dormant, and then when it rains, they germinate right away.
Okay.
And I think, like, particularly that group I mentioned, the Clostridia, they're spore formers. And I think that these beneficial Clostridia are really essential for maintaining balance in the community. And so I expect that they're a large part of what we're selecting for with this process.
Interesting. So, all right, there's a lot of people out there who say, well, my dog eats poop from the other dog every day. Is he, you know, is he giving himself a fecal transplant? Is that a good thing, a bad thing, or, you know, depends what the other dog's pooping out?
Right. So I think that animals naturally do that. And I think I find it fascinating that there's actually sort of a literature of people who've written about self-medication in the animal kingdom. Mm-hmm. So they're like insects that eat plant toxic plants. And I mean, actually have mammals that do that might actually help them. But the problem with your dog eating poop, especially in maybe an urban environment, for one thing, is we actually in the Bay Area have a fair amount of human poop now that we have a large homeless population.
Nice.
I had a friend's dog die because they ate human poop that had THC in it from someone who had been doing marijuana.
Wow.
You don't know what pathogens and parasites are in that poop or chemicals.
Interesting. So I've got 7 dogs in this household. And actually, we have really good poop at the moment, but occasionally I get somebody that's got, you know, not so good poop. So if I feed them the good poop from the other guys, am I making a difference? I'm not sure if I can put that in their food bowl, but, you know, just asking. Because I'm seeing everybody's little wheels turning like, well, hey, I've got another dog in the house who has a really good bowel. Why don't I just put some poop in from him in the bowl for the other dog? I mean, would it help?
The thing is, we do a lot of testing, and I mean, there's still that risk that you're basically going to be spreading something from one dog to the next. I mean, we find E. coli fairly commonly in some dogs, and then you basically be just spreading that to the others. So, I would still advise testing that dog before you start using it.
I'm imagining all these people going out and scooping up their dog's poop and going, well, I can use this. I think we'd be better off to send the poo to you.
And, you know, I think what we've done is create an easy way to do this. So before oral capsules were available, you know, veterinarians were having to put poop in a blender and deliver it by enema. And that's just really messy. And
I've seen and talked to veterinarians, you know, who use this process all the time and just say it's the most wonderful thing in the world, and I have yet to do it in my clinic. I'm just saying. And I think that fecal transplants, I mean, they're being used more in people as well. I think it has a wonderful healing benefit, and I think it has a great place. I just have not put it in place in my clinic. And now that you're offering these capsules, let me tell you, I'm going that way. So if somebody has their pet tested, and then you decide, you know, okay, we need to make these diet changes, more fiber, more protein, we're going to prescribe these fecal transplant capsules based on what your pet needs, then do we test after that process to see how we've changed things, and how long after the process would you do that?
Yeah, we definitely recommend testing afterwards. We have a package where you get a before test, then you do the capsules, and then we recommend testing 2 weeks after finishing the capsules. We don't want you to test during them because the system can be adjusting to the introduction of these beneficial microbes. And so if you wait 2 weeks after, then we know that all of the material in the capsules has passed through the system, but, you know, several weeks earlier, and we can see how the community has shifted in response.
Which is very interesting. And how long would an animal normally be treated with those capsules?
It's about 30 days.
30 days. Okay. Now, I actually have a client in Ohio who was having some issues, and I had her contact you. And after she finished her 30 days, she said, well, this is the easiest thing I ever did. My dog is cured. I love this. It was wonderful. And she said much better than, you know, her dog living on metronidazole, and certainly much healthier for a pet. So, Holly, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. This is, somebody has to do it. And I'm glad that you are excited about it, because, you know, for me, this would be like watching paint dry, having to sit here and study the animal biome from a DNA standpoint. And, you know, you just have the mindset for this is the most exciting thing ever. And I'm so glad that you do, because somebody has to. And thank you for that.
Thank you so much.
All right, so if anybody wants more information, www.animalbiome.com, animalbiome.com. They also have a Facebook page, Animal Biome, and an Instagram, animal.biome. Check it out. I think you will be amazed by the work that is being done, the healing that is being done. I would bet that they've got some success stories posted on there, so you can kind of see the before and after and get some testimonials. I can just tell you from my point of view, the people that have used this have been very happy. So, Holly, thanks again for your time today. Thanks for all the work that you're doing. Continued success. Oh, and we forgot to talk about it, but Holly did tell me they're starting to do a little work with ferrets. So for those of you who are out there with the ferret population, you might want to go to Animal Biome and see what's going on there as well. Holly, thanks a lot. You've been listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on DreamVision7Radio.com.
That's all for today. Find more answers to your questions next time on Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, every Monday and Tuesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time by going to DreamVision7Radio.com. Join holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy to discover healthy options for raising your pets in a more holistic manner. Visit DrJudyMorgan.com to learn more.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.